Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, I'm just going to ask you guys, when are you going to get your own spinoff? Because you guys are so funny together. It's just too good.
I'm ready. Have you heard anything? I'm available.
I'm for it.
For Ice Age, you know, from now until forever. But, it's been kind of cool to have been a part of this since 2005 now. And, so, you know, rarely are you afforded the opportunity to revisit a character. And now I've done it 4 times. And it's refreshing to see that Eddie has totally not evolved. he's still the same maniac.
That's why we love him.
Yeah, thanks.
And it's great because he's a twin of, he's a brother of Crash, who's Sean William Scott.
Right.
And the two of them are just, it's like Jackass times two. It just really, they just really are just the most mischief makers, frat brothers, whatever. And it's really fun to see them, the dynamic they have together.
Is your technology backfiring?
No idea. There's no picture.
And how was it for you joining the whole crew this time around?
Oh, my God. I was so flattered and excited when I was asked to be a part of it. It was, like, the biggest no-brainer yes.
We recognized your voice right away. I was with my daughter. I go, it's Schmidt.
I know. It was one of the jobs outside of New Girl that I've been most excited to do.
Well, he's got a young children, too.
Yeah, I have a 6-year-old daughter who, I mean, I was like, oh, my God, I'm actually in something that she's got, that we can, like, experience together.
Can you explain your character, though? Can you just, what is a dino bird? I'm like, what are these things?
How does he fit into the film, or what is he?
What is he? It's like,
well, I remember when I walked in, I felt very smart for, like, half a second, because I had asked them, I'd taken my daughter to the Natural History Museum, and we go quite a bit, and we had gotten a book that had all the names of the different dinosaurs, and one of the very first birds was something called an Archaeopteryx, is that right?
Yes, an Archaeopteryx.
Yeah, and I thought I was pretty fancy, and then I walked in and sat down with Lori and everybody. I was like, so are the dino birds Archaeopteryx? I can't even And they're like, oh, well, no, actually not. But they were similar to a degree. But I think they fit somewhere in that world.
Well, you're right, because we did have an Archaeopteryx, and I think it was the first movie when they had this baby and they're trying to feed the baby. Or maybe it was the third movie when Sid was trying to feed the babies. I can't remember, but he was trying to he figured that they would eat a bird, and it was an Archaeopteryx. Mm-hmm. But I think he got scared away and he actually ended up freeing the bird instead. But it was an Archaeopteryx, so you're right. But these birds, really interesting enough, there were, you know, we wanted to do a cross because we were going back into the Lost World to see Buck again. And we wanted to come back to the dinosaurs, but we wanted to come back with something fresh and new. And so we decided to do a cross between a dinosaur and a bird. And there had been, you know, it's true that dinosaurs did, birds evolved from dinosaurs. So we thought, well, let's make a little hybrid for ourselves. So Peter Dessev, who's our brilliant character designer, who's designed all the characters in all the Ice Age movies, he designed these dino birds, and he designed Roger, and he designed the father, Gavin, and he designed the sister, Gertie, and somewhere about a year or two into the pre-production or production of the movie, we saw an article. He sent me an article that said that they had just found fossils of this bird, and they did a diagram of it, and it looked exact. It looked really, really like Roger.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Luckily, my character is easier to pronounce. Possum.
Yeah. Or opossum.
They still exist.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yes.
I am Max Trello from Israel. I'm David.
It's nice to meet you.
So if this is a movie for your kid, I imagine you didn't, you know, show the American Horror Story part that came out this past year.
We're not using that footage to promote the film. No.
But just, to continue on that, over the past few months even, just a variety of roles, Doris, this, New Girl, of course, is that something that you consciously look for as an actor?
I think I've been really lucky just in that, this sort of came to me, and I was, like I said before, it was such a no-brainer, obviously. Just been lucky. I've been in a situation to do some really different things and work with some really unbelievable people. And I certainly like the challenge outside of New Girl. It would feel odd to do something so similar to New Girl outside of New Girl, because we do it 8 months out of the year. I think you want to challenge yourself.
And this was a no-brainer for us because Mac's voice, I mean, it's so unique and it's so distinct and different from the rest of the cast. Everyone in our cast has a very unique, different voice, but this was so fun and quirky, and that's what we really needed for the character to make him stand out. And we also needed someone because the father is such a brain bird, and, you know, a bird brain, and he's got such harebrained ideas, and we wanted Roger to actually have not brawns but brains, and he actually challenges his father a lot. So in order to challenge your father, you have to kind of be the kind of character and have the kind of delivery and sensibility that I think that he brought to this, so that it doesn't come off as a annoying or cloying or disrespectful, but really quite sweet and quirky.
For Lori, when you're first formulating the story, did you guys think of the stuff for Scrap first, or did the stuff on Earth come first?
For this particular story? For this particular story, the stuff on Scrat, the stuff with Scrat actually came first, because it was really connected to the very first film, the first Ice Age, where they went through the ice museum and they saw the prehistoric fish behind ice, and then they saw the dinosaur behind ice, and then they saw, we pull back and we see a spaceship. Goodness knows how that ever got there. No one ever knew. It was just sort of a real fun little joke to us. But we also thought, well, there's something very interesting there. And there's a story. We didn't know what it was, but I knew one day we would tell that story. So when we were thinking about ideas for this movie, every movie of the Ice Age franchise seems to get bigger in scope than the one before it. And I thought, this is the perfect story to tell when Scrat actually comes back and falls into that spaceship from the very first movie. Blasts off into space. There's a whole new world of the cosmos that we can introduce, which is so different from the rest of the other Ice Age movies. And it just felt like that was the thing to do. So once he's up there rearranging the cosmos, and what's the worst thing that could happen to us, but something that's very relatable that we can understand that happens today, is sending an asteroid down towards Earth, because we read about it all the time, we hear about all the near misses, we're tracking where they are at all times, and we're also NASA and you know, scientists are trying to figure out ways how to divert asteroids. It felt like the way to go. So once you start with that, then you figure out the storylines for the characters. But all the storylines for all the characters, for Crash and Eddie, for the Herd, for the new characters, it all has to sort of grow out of what we've seen before for them, because we don't want to tell the same stories again. So we just continue to evolve and change and grow the stories and grow the characters.
Hi, Jose Torres, Estrellas in LA. More on that. The spaceship is a hell of a callback, if there's ever been one. It seems to tie all the movies that, you know, nice into a neat bow, like one of those nice Tiffany bows. Now, is this your very subtle or very on-the-nose way of preparing us to say goodbye to these characters?
I would never do that. No, you know, I think we always just work on each film at a time. We never look forward. We have to look back, because we want to see where we've been and we want to, you know, point to where we're going. But we don't usually look beyond the film we're working on. Each film takes about four and a half years for me to start, you know, with the ideas and then the scripts, and then we have 2 years for pre-production and production. So it's a long time. So I'm not going to look 6 or 7 or 8 years in the future at this point. I think if the audiences say they want another movie, I do have more ideas.
Awesome. Kind of building on that, Lori, yes. Can you kind of tell us the state of the franchise as far as the ideas that you want to take and do shorts with, and things that you might want to take to television for specials, and how is everything kind of working right now? Because Hollywood's definitely a franchise, you know, loving system right now.
Right. Well, we did do a Christmas special, and we did do an Easter special for television. We have done some Scrat shorts. And I'm, you know, we're so busy right now focusing on the features that, you know, I'm hoping that there will be a TV series in our future, but that remains to be seen. And I would love to do more shorts, you know, but our depending on how much we have in the studio at the time, and if there is any free time to get a short in there, I would love to. I would definitely push for one. As far as who the shorts would be, I mean, I'd love Crash and Eddie to have a short. I'd love for the new character to spin off something for the new characters, but that all is just, you know, in my mind at the moment.
Go ahead. Yellow.
My question is the actors. So, do you see yourself when you see this film, like you're like moving some like an eyelow or mouse moving movement, or whatever? Do you kind of recognize yourself?
I feel like Roger's probably a better actor than I am. Roger made a good choice there. But yeah, definitely. I mean, I know all of the sessions are recorded. And there are little things here and there. And you know what you're doing with your voice and the inflections you're putting on certain things. So then when you watch it, you're kind of like, I see what's happening here. And that's one of the most exciting parts about watching the film.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to look at my face the way it is now for me, but when they incorporate, like, you know, 3D animation and lots of fur and insane fangs and whatnot, like, I'm like, all right, I can accept that. But it's quite cool to sort of see small nuances about your personality come out in the characters, and I really believe that the animators do a brilliant job in translating the things we do in the booth to the final product. And Eddie's less of a mouth breather than I am, but otherwise, he's a pretty good guy.
Josh is right, though, by the way, because they do their voices, the actors do their records, and then we give it to the animators, and then the animators listen to their nuances, and we do sometimes take their, you know, shots of, you know, we film them from like the shoulders up. So if they do anything when they're delivering a line, sometimes the animators will want to look for reference and just see, well, was he blinking when he did that, or was his eyes crossed, or how is he delivering that line? And occasionally they will put it into the performance, but they always take their animation. They always do their animation based on their performances. So the nuances from these characters and these actors will definitely be in there.
Maybin, hi.
Hi.
How much work did you guys do in the booth together, if any at all? Did you bounce off each other's reactions, faces?
No, we do all of our stuff solo.
ADR booth was scheduled separately, I'm assuming?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
do they let you see playback from other actors just so you can kind of get a feel, or maybe, some sort of reaction?
Well, I think, you know, the directors come in and know what's happening so specifically on the animation side,
mm-hmm.
that they're our best guides. And they also know exactly, with Lori as well, they know exactly what they need and what they want and are aware of everything else that's happening. You know, in this one specifically, I think there was so much going on with, like, rocks and
right.
things and explosions, and there was so much going on around that when we would be in the booth solo, our directors would kind of sit around us and be like, this is what's happening, this is what's happening, and we'd be able to go over each line individually, them knowing exactly what we want and walking us through it. So I think, like, as much benefit as you could probably get from being with the other actors, I don't know how much that it would ultimately work
mm-hmm.
in what they're trying to put it into.
Mm-hmm. And what's cool about being alone is that you sort of become unencumbered by, like, vanity or being, like, sort of critical of yourself. And by 3 pages into the recording, you've worked up a good sweat, and you're just being ridiculous, and you feel so comfortable to just try things. And then if the producers or the director don't like it, you don't hear it because they're on the other side of the glass. Like, when it gets really quiet and you're waiting for notes, you're like, they're discussing how much I suck.
Like, never.
And then they'll be like, okay. okay, let's try it another way. They're very nice.
No, it's not like it. But we did try, I think with John Leguizamo, we did try a couple of times to have him record with another actor, and it didn't really work for us because, you know, you want to get the, you want to get that repartee, but in order to get the repartee, they tend to speak over each other. And what we need to do is get really clean reads, single reads, so it doesn't really help. The only way we could possibly do it, if we ever do it in the future, would have two booths with glass on partitions on both, and they speak to each other. Again, they're not humanly relating, but they're doing it through glass, but then they wouldn't, their performance wouldn't step on the other performance. So that it's more for a practical reason that we do that for anything else, but vanity could play into it too.
Yeah.
I thought it was brilliant to have Neil deGrasse Tyson in this. And how hard was it to get him to sign on? Was he a fan of the Ice Age, or, you know, how did it come about?
Well, you know, we thought of this character, and we thought, you know, we would love to have him, but we thought, that's never going to happen. I mean, he's the most, the primo, most, you know, astrophysicist in the world. I mean, how is he going to come onto this movie? But he was willing to take a meeting, and we pitched to him, the directors. You all saw the movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so imagine the directors sitting, you know, and me sitting there pitching this movie to Neil and saying, okay, well, the mammoths are going to push this giant crystal into the volcano. It's going to erupt and shatter the, or, you know, divert the asteroid. I mean, we were horrified to have to do that. As we're talking to him, we're realizing what we're saying and to whom we're saying it to. And it was so silly, but he actually really loved it. He loved the idea that we were using science at all. Even if we take science and throw it on its ear, he says you have to know a little bit about science before you can even make fun of it. So he really appreciated the fact that we were trying. And every now and then he would correct us, but even in the pitch. But he immediately, we showed him a picture of Neil DeBuckweasel, his character, and it was wearing the vest, and it kind of had the little mustache and the hair, and it looked a little, and he let out this enormous guffaw. It was such a huge laugh that just, I mean, you just fall in love with him, and he immediately, he said he'd do it, and so it was great. We had several sessions with him. He was fantastic. He would definitely, you know, he would look at some of the sequences we did, or we would show him, or he'd read them, and he'd say, okay, I could see how the logic of what you're doing here, and then some of them he'd say, this is way off. And he'd say, this is what it should be, or this is what you need to do. And but he was such
just
a good
the
lines,
yeah.
But he did change. He did change a few of his lines. I mean, I think once, I think there was one line where we called him a physicist, and he said, "No, I'm an astrophysicist." So he would. He insisted on the character being an astrophysicist. So there were certain things like that. But
Neil won't
strange.
Be invited back. There won't be a spinoff of his character. That's for sure.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for coming. Thanks for seeing the film.
Thank you very much.